Welcome to the X-Men TASS podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
And I'm Sonia.
And today we're discussing Till Death Do Us Part, Part 2, Episode 15, the second episode of Season 2 of the X-Men animated series. Just catching everyone up in case this is their first episode. Now you know
exactly. For some reason.
Yeah, now you know exactly where to find us.
Welcome, indeed. All right.
So this episode pretty much leaves off where we left last week. The X-Men are in complete disarray. Things are bad.
Right. Well, the whole last episode, as we discussed, was basically a series of setups.
Yes.
By Morph, who is being controlled by Mr. Sinister, who we didn't see too much of in the last episode.
We'll see him a bit more in this episode.
But it's really like a series of Morph setting up his former friends in, like, these various situations to really just try to screw them over. Like, he really wants revenge, it seems.
So, let's do a recap. So, Storm was shot down from the sky by police officers led by Morph, who had shape-shifted into a police sergeant and told them all to, like, kill Storm, basically. Mm-hmm. So she's been hospitalized. Beast is currently trapped in the danger room, where Morph set the danger room, like, danger meter to, like, a million. So Beast is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Jubilee was sent to the Friends of Humanity base. They're, like, a human group that hates mutants by fake Storm, which Morph again, on a mission. She gets captured and they want to kill her. Gambit was left paralyzed after trying to kiss Rogue because Rogue Morph convinced Gambit that, oh, you could touch me and you'll be fine. So he's in a coma. So things are bad. Oh, and Professor X went off to Antarctica to rescue Magneto, which also turned out to be Morph fooling the professor. And I always thought it was weird how the professor says Antarctica. Is that how you pronounce it? No, right?
I mean...
It's Antarctica.
Antarctica.
Antarctica, yeah. Not Antarctica.
Well, he has superb enunciation.
But is that the way... Someone please tell us on the Facebook group if that's how you pronounce
it. What do you mean? It depends where you're from, right?
It does?
Yeah.
What? But he speaks English. He doesn't speak some other language.
Yeah, but it depends where your accent is from.
But... Okay, whatever. Someone on the Facebook group...
That's like, okay, like if you... Like certain parts of the country, people say internet, and other parts of the country, people say internet.
That's still not quite the same, because I think he's got like an extra T in there where there isn't one.
The way it's spelled? Yeah, he pronounces it phonetically, the way it's spelled. Antarctica.
No, he's saying Antarctica. He's putting a tart in there.
All right. Anyway.
Someone in the Facebook group, please settle this for us. We're very annoyed. So things are bad for the X-Men. But two X-Men are sort of happy temporarily. Scott and Jean are sort of sailing off to a private island for a honeymoon retreat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking back on it, it just so happens that this is the island that Mr. Sinister has his base on. Okay, so let me just tell you what happened. So Scott and Jean, they're sailing to some island, and this mutant that we've never met before, his name happens to be Ruckus, he uses his mutant power to...
Cause a ruckus,
right. Ah. So his power, he basically has the powers of Banshee, a more famous mutant. He can scream really loud and, you know, cause destruction with his voice. And Ruckus looks ridiculous. He's, like, sort of in the weird... like, fancy man Gambit mold in a strange way.
He's got, like, this fancy purple cape.
Yeah, like, wears a big and, like, purple trench
long,
coat.
Long, flowing hair.
But it's, like, lavender colored. And he's really full of himself. He really seems very arrogant. He's got a lot of puns about using his power. I can't really remember, but, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, he, you know, destroys their boat, and Scott and Jean wind up on this island, and they're captured by Mr. Sinister's goons. Essentially, a group of strongmen. There's, like, one guy named Hairbag, and he's just got, like, the power of super strength and agility, kind of like Beast. He can also, like, we discover later in the episode, he's got, like, really bad breath that poisons Wolverine. And then there's another mutant that's just really strong. Just like a generically, we don't catch his name in this episode.
No, he's like somewhere between like Juggernaut and the Blob.
Right. Yeah. Well, but he's muscular. He's not like fat like the Blob.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And then there's this one other mutant that he's just like a goop monster, like a purple goop monster with long red goopy hair, and he's kind of like got like a vampire face, and he also has like a weird trench coat thing, purple trench coat, but that's sort of part of his body.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell, but he's got like. like a cross between Mr. Fantastic and Clayface from Batman.
Yeah.
You know, so he's pretty gross too. So anyway, those are Mr. Sinister's goons. They capture Scott and Jean. They put them in mutant suppressing collars that we saw in Genosha. So right away, they're in trouble too. So the X-Men are not doing well.
That's pretty funny though, because one of the goons says to Cyclops, like, oh, these are out of fashion in Genosha right now.
Oh, yeah.
Which, well, like, if you haven't been watching and analyzing every episode, is a little bit of a callback, you know? It's like, hey, remember in season one when you guys were on Genosha and everyone had these collars? I appreciated that.
Yeah,
detail.
I appreciate that too. It's awesome. And then, and you know, and like we said, they're Mr. Sinister's goons. So here we see a little bit more of Mr. Sinister as this episode unfolds. Morph is, like, still hovering around the X-Mansion, but he's sort of losing his evil nerve. He's, like, questioning, like, why he's doing this, like, why he's betraying his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of having an emotional meltdown. But then Mr. Sinister arrives and, like, kind of reminds him that you're here to seek revenge and I'm the one who saved you. Like, you owe me. And then, you know, let's just talk about Mr. Sinister for a minute. We'll get into detail about him a little bit more later. But he is kind of a ridiculous-looking villain.
He's disgusting. He's a great-looking villain.
Quite sinister-looking.
Like, yeah, like, you know right away that he's a villain. He's got, like, those real pointy teeth.
He's got vampire teeth.
It's not vampire teeth,
right,
because it's not, like, two fangs that stick out.
They're
it's
all
like
pointy.
Every single one of his teeth is, like, far away from the other ones and, like, super sharp.
Yeah, so if he ever bites his tongue, he's in a lot of trouble.
Basically.
Well, maybe not, because we see later he's got these weird healing powers.
Right.
So he's got, like, whenever he, like, you know, he gets shot later on and he heals, you hear this, like, cool metallic, like, healing sound.
Yeah.
It's difficult to explain, but it's a nice sound effect. So his body, there's something weird going on with his body.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he also, he's got, like, black lipstick.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just the color of his lips.
Right, and, like, red eyes.
Bright red eyeballs.
Super white skin.
Yeah, like, skin is white. Like, that's like, that's why he seems like a vampire. He also has, like, a red diamond in his skull that does something, maybe.
Right,
and
his forehead.
And he's got, like, the exact same hair as Colossus. When Colossus turns into Colossus... you know, Colossus.
Yeah.
Like, his hair is, like, this, like, blue metal, like,
dome. Right.
So, like, that. Mr. Sinister has the same haircut.
Yeah.
So, he's a weird guy. As someone pointed out to me, I called him an early mutant from Victorian times.
Yeah.
He is from Victorian times, but someone on the Facebook group, I forget who, thank you, though, corrected me and said, no, he's not a mutant, he's just a weird geneticist. So, but basically what I said was true, is that he's some crazy geneticist that did experiments on himself or something happened.
Right.
Where he, like, lives forever
so
now.
So it's like he wasn't born a mutant, but he made himself a mutant. Like, he mutated his own genes using his powers of genetics or something.
Yeah, I'm still not 100% sure, because I feel like he's, like, another character whose origins, like, shift and change based on who's writing him. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, weird continuity with Mr. Sinister. So I'm not, like, you know, in 2017, I don't know what, like, the latest on him is, but let's just go by... that, you know, at the very least, he's a bizarre, like, monstrous scientist.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, there's Mr. Sinister. He's got reasons why he wants to capture the X-Men. We'll get in that a bit. But let's, you know, the X-Men, first they have to untangle themselves from all this chaos.
Right.
So Beast, you know, very cleverly turns the Danger Room against itself so he can escape.
Right, uses its own lasers to blast the hole and he gets out.
Or it's, like, not really a laser, it's, like, a big, like, metal... thing, like, weight or something that smashes the door down. You know, there's an interesting scene where Jubilee is captured by the Friends of Humanity, which we've already declared are, like, some of the more interesting villains in the series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's dragged out on stage and all the humans are, like, screaming at her.
They're having, like, an anti-mutant rally and they bring her out as, like, a specimen.
Right, and they're like, get rid of her! And then Jubilee, really defiantly and confidently, is like, why do you hate us?
Yeah.
You know, she's not quite as terrified as maybe she should be. And the Friends of Humanity leader guy is like, because you were born.
Yeah.
Which is, that's, like, super
the
racist.
The height of racism.
Yeah, the height of bigotry. And it's at that moment that Wolverine comes out of nowhere with an awesome heroic rescue.
Yeah, it's really awesome. He comes in the ceiling and he, like, sticks out his claws and uses them to, like, slow his descent.
It destroys their Nazi banner.
You're right.
He's like, "Rawr!" He gives out one of his great screams.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he really easily dispatches these human goons. It's like, really nice. He slices their guns up and throws them into the speaking lectern and... you know, no one can mess with Wolverine.
Right.
I kind of love that. And
you know what, though? Like, Jubilee is in handcuffs because I guess they realize what her power is, or maybe they, whatever. Maybe not. But she makes some kind of empty threat. She's like, yeah, you're talking big, like, when you got me in handcuffs, like that, right? But, like, I still feel like
she should be able to use
her powers. Yeah, just because her hands are behind her back, she should be able to still like turn around.
I mean,
around,
I guess she's just not confident aiming from behind her back.
I mean, it's also probably not a smart move for her because there's so many of them and just her.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I mean, she's a frail like 15-year-old girl, more or less.
Yeah.
And then Wolverine has a great line to Jubilee as he's rescuing her. He says, "If you knew how much bubblegum I had to sniff to find you."
Yeah, it's funny.
It's really funny. You can imagine Wolverine sniffing bubblegum in the streets of New York City. These are the days before the internet, kids. This is how you had to find someone back then.
Yep.
You had to really smell their gum on the street. And then, you know, back at the X-Mansion, you know, Gambit wakes up from his coma, and Rogue's really pissed at him. And it's at this point that Gambit, like, definitively answers a question that's been lurking in all of our minds since season one. Gambit is not a rapist. Because Rogue accuses him, "You snuck a kiss on me." But Gambit replies, "Gambit don't ever go where he's not invited."
I mean, that's a good lesson for, the kids, you know? Like,
well, the question's
that's
been...
That's a good role model, but I don't think he... I never suspected that he was a rapist.
Right, yeah, that was way too far. Like, I should not have said that.
He's just extremely flirtatious, and it's he knows it's not going anywhere with Rogue because he can't... What, before this episode, right?
Right, yeah.
Like, he knew, like, from the beginning that he could never, like, have something with Rogue because, like, they can't touch each other, but...
I guess the question is, like, to what level was Gambit sexually harassing Rogue in the workplace? So he just wants to make it clear for the record that he kissed her not because he just, like, might do that, you know?
Right.
He, you know, he
well,
felt
also,
like he had an invitation.
Well, also, she made it clear... Well, it wasn't really Rogue is the problem, is that... You know, it was Morph pretending to be Rogue, but, like, she made it, made it clear that it was a welcome advance, right?
Yeah.
So,
anyway. So it would be an interesting lawsuit if Rogue was ever pressing charges.
Yeah.
But so that's what's up with Gambit, and Storm's in the hospital, but she's okay. Beast and Rogue break in to make sure, and it's at that point that Rogue confronts Beast, saying, like, "We called you for backup, and you said you'd come, but you never showed up." And that's where Beast, like, immediately suspects, like, something's afoul.
Yeah.
And so all the X-Men are, you know, they've got their senses together, more or less, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. They've gathered in the war room, and Professor X arrives, and he says, "There's some sort of brain-disrupting device out there causing everyone to act crazy." And that seems kind of plausible based on what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then Wolverine walks in with Jubilee, and he smells Morph and starts to freak out.
Right.
And that's when they quickly discover that Professor X is not...
is actually Morph,
is actually
pretending
Morph
to be Professor X.
Yeah, they...
So they all realize that Morph is alive and, you know...
It's quite stunning for the whole group. And then everything makes sense to them, what happened in the last 24 hours. And, you know, then, you know, Morph escapes. There's another great Wolverine line. I think he said it before, but it said again, "Plasma grenade!" and then another plasma grenade goes off. Morph tries to steal the Blackbird, but Wolverine's waiting for him. They get into a fight. Morph turns into Wolverine, and we see that as Wolverine, Morph can also pop claws too, which I don't know. It's like, that seems like an extra, like, extraneous from one's body to have claws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are these claws sharp? Are they made of adamantium? See, that's the question. Like, we don't know, like, if they're the same as Wolverine's claws.
Mm-hmm.
In the X-Men movie, in X-Men 1, Mystique turns into Wolverine and they have a fight. She's got claws.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Wolverine's able to cut them off.
Oh.
Because they're not, like, obviously they're not adamantium. Mystique can't create adamantium.
Well, why not?
Because adamantium...
I mean, who knows what kind of process her body is going through. Maybe
I know,
she's,
but,
like,
adamantium's too magical and special. You can't. Adamantium's too rare and weird. She can't just, like, make that.
Well, you never know. Depends on what, like, the breadth of her
power
is.
We know
is.
Based on the movie she can't because
okay,
he cuts
like,
them off.
All right, okay, fine. In the movie, but, like, as for the purposes of the cartoon...
Right, we don't know what, like,
the
extent of what more... We don't really see what happens. But anyway, Jubilee messes up. She shoots the wrong Wolverine, and Morph escapes with the Blackbird, which is a pretty big setback for the X-Men because
transportation.
Yeah, and that costs like $1 billion.
Yeah.
So Morph just flies away. And, you know, but The X-Men don't seem that upset about it, and I think we'll learn why later. I was a little confused at first, like why they're not that upset that he takes the Blackbird. He could take it anywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that all their equipment back at the X-Men base can track where the Blackbird's going.
Right.
So that comes in use later. So but anyway, now we're wondering. So now Morph has been revealed to be alive, and Beast surmises that he's going to seek revenge on Cyclops, because Cyclops is the one who infamously left him behind to die against the Sentinels in the first episode.
Right, so for most of our X-Men, like, the loose ends are kind of tied up. Everybody's, like, healed and healthy and, like, back together again. Meanwhile, we cut over to Jean and Cyclops on their, like, quote-unquote honeymoon, where they've been captured by Mr. Sinister's goons.
And his weird, like, jungle forest base.
Right, and they're, like, strapped into, like, some weird...
They've got, like, metal chains on, arm chains on them. And it's here that Mr. Sinister reveals what his plans are. And he says he's been tracking Cyclops and Jean Grey their entire lives. And I guess he was really excited about their marriage. Because he's like, you two are the perfect specimens. It's from your DNA I will create an army of perfect mutants that are superior to all other mutants.
It's also at this point that he reveals that he was the priest at the...
Oh, no, Morph.
Right.
No, we haven't gotten to that just yet.
Sorry,
that's okay. And it's at this moment that Mr. Sinister, like... He's got weird technology.
Yeah.
He takes, like, this weird slimy hose from the ground that seems to be alive.
It looks like an animal, though, right?
Yeah, kind of. It's got, like, a mouth with sharp teeth, like a piranha plant or something.
Right.
And it's dripping blood around its red lips.
It's really disgusting.
It's really gross. And, like, he attaches it to Cyclops, and they cut away. You don't actually see what happens to him.
Right. But it's basically, like, a huge, giant leech.
Ugh. Yeah.
You know?
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's squishy. But also... but then, like, after that, Mr. Sinister holds up this, like, gleaming golden chip.
That he, like, takes out from the inside of its mouth.
Yeah.
That weird thing's mouth.
And I guess we're, like, to assume that's, like, some aspect of Cyclops' DNA or... I don't know what. Like, he's extracted something from Cyclops, and this little weird animal thing, like, turns into a golden chip.
It just seems so unnecessary, you know?
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, you can get a DNA test done, and you just, like, scrape a Q-tip on the inside of your cheek, and that's your DNA, and you're good to go. Like, I don't...
he's Mr. Sinister. He needs sinister medical devices.
Sure.
So, but he kind of leaves them alone at the time being for some reason. I don't know why. That's when Morph comes up. He shows up to the island, and he confronts Cyclops. And, you know, Cyclops and Jean are stunned that Morph is alive as well. And that's where Morph reveals that their wedding was fake. He was the priest.
Right.
And, you know, Cyclops is pretty
aghast.
Which
still seems like a really weird type of revenge to get. Because either, like, Mr. Sinister sent them to do it, which doesn't make sense because he's so excited for them to be together.
Or Morph
just did it on his own volition because he was trying to get revenge on Cyclops for leaving him.
The show comments on it in a nice way. The show comments on it in a nice way because Cyclops is, like, also equally confused. He's like, what is this, a sick joke? He's like, this is your revenge?
Yeah.
So, but still, you know, Cyclops does his best to convince Morph that he's still an X-Man.
Right.
And that he should, you know, like, remember, like, whose friends are. But, and it's at this moment that the X-Men, who they must have been tracking the Blackbird, they arrive at this island and they're ready to tango with Sinister's goons. And, you know, they get into it with these guys. And it's a pretty standard fight. You know, the X-Men get beat up a little bit.
But they ultimately prevail.
Yeah, they manage.
And they get to see, like, all the mutant powers in action of, like, the goons.
And then, actually at this point, like, when the goons fail, Mr. Sinister takes charge and he starts attacking the X-Men.
Right.
And he's, like, raining down, like, laser bolts from his hands.
Actually, the highlight of this fight is the first time, like, Wolverine encounters that one, like, really hairy mutant.
Yeah.
And he says, like, something to him, come over here, hair bag, or something like that. And, like, that's actually the mutant's name. And he's like, how did you know my name?
That reminded me of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Spoilers for those who haven't seen it. There's that dumb character named Laserface. Uh-huh. No, Taserface.
Yeah.
And everyone makes fun of him for his stupid name.
Right.
Hairbag would be Taserface's friend in this world of extended Marvel friendships.
Yep.
Of dumb bad guys. So, and then, like I said, Mr. Sinister, I guess, also has the power to shoot, like, lasers out of his hands, and he's kind of, like, blasting the X-Men on the beach. And at this point, Scott just uses his strength and smashes, like, he breaks out of his, like, metal shackles somehow.
I thought that was kind of late. I mean, like, okay, he gets out of the metal shackles. Like, who knows anything about that? So, fine. Yeah. Like, he's strong.
Well, did something happen? Did it get loosened by a fight or something? Did we miss a detail?
I don't think so. Okay. I think he just concentrated all his energy and he was able to break it.
Yeah.
But what doesn't make sense is that right after that, he just, like, grabs on... He was still wearing that collar that they had in Genosha, and he's able to just, like, rip it off, which in Genosha was not possible.
Because they said it would explode if you took the collar off.
Right.
Yeah, but I guess these don't have explosive charges.
Or maybe that was just a lie and nobody wanted to test it.
That's a good question. That's either a plot hole or just different collars. More mutant-friendly collars. So Scott frees himself. He frees Jean. And then Mr. Sinister seems kind of unbeatable because at some point Scott convinced Morph to turn on Mr. Sinister. So Morph shoots Mr. Sinister with his laser gun, but Mr. Sinister just easily heals it.
Right. You see, like, the hole go all the way through him from the laser, and then we hear that nice, like, metallic healing sound.
Yeah.
Clinking back together all his
and he just kind of laughs. He's like, oh, Morph, you fool. Yeah. But Scott shoots Mr. Sinister with his optic blasts, and this time it hurts. It's like green goo is oozing every time Scott shoots him. It's pretty gross.
Not as gross as that leech monster.
Right. But. And that's something from the comics in the early 90s that Scott was the only one who could hurt Mr. Sinister. It made them for, like, a really good, like, hero-villain dynamic. And then I think it was later revealed that Mr. Sinister was lying, that Scott's optic blast couldn't really hurt him. It was all set up. That was in the comics, but I don't know. Like, that's what I'm saying with Mr. Sinister. Like, I don't, like, know what his deal is, really. I never really read too many Mr. Sinister plot lines.
Hmm.
So people in the Facebook group, please keep informing us as to what's going on with Mr. Sinister.
Let us know if you have more deets.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the air. So Mr. Sinister has to hightail it with his goons. He's got his own, like, cool, like, white, like, spaceship thing. And, you know, it's, like, it's interesting in this episode. Like, my first thought about Mr. Sinister was that once his plans were revealed, he's kind of like a low-rent version of Apocalypse. Because he's got, like, a similar goal. Like, he wants to, like... You know, Apocalypse's goal was to kind of destroy, like, mankind so that a new, like, stronger species could arise from the ashes and he would rebuild a better world in his image. And Mr. Sinister, it's kind of the same, except it's, like, on a lower scale. He just wants to genetically, like, engineer mutants that are superior to other mutants.
Yeah.
And just have and control them like an army.
I want to know how he knew that Jean and Scott have, like, the perfect DNA to do that, because it seems to me like there are other mutants out there with kind of superior powers.
Maybe just because they're so good looking.
Or, like,
<That's> they're perfect 10 models, the two of them.
That's true.
They make a real power couple, and they don't have any, like, abnormal.
Like, they both look normal.
Yeah.
But their powers seemingly don't have too many, like, drawbacks.
But he seemingly isn't interested in normal looking people, though, so I don't think
the looks. It's just, like, you know what I mean, though? Like, there's a bunch of, like, mutants out there that have, like, compounded powers. Like, they can do lots of different stuff, and like, these two, you know,
I mean, who
their
knows?
Powers are cool, but like,
it's just something.
How do you decide, like, these two are the perfect ones?
It's just something that was pulled from the comics that the writers borrowed. I'm sure, like I said, there's a greater explanation for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But Jean and Cyclops in the early 90s were, like, the defining mutant couple in the Marvel universe, you know? So there was, like, a lot going on with, like, the Phoenix and, like, with their children in the future and other, like, things, like, like folding timelines and, you know, like, a lot of weird savior stuff going on. So let's just say because it's...
They're the model couple on the cover of Mutant Teen Bop or whatever.
Yeah, Mr. Sinister senses that they're two popular characters from a very popular, like, franchise of copyrights.
I'll accept that.
Yeah, he wants to go where the action is.
All right.
And so, you know, they deal with Sinister, and Morph escapes as well. So, like, Wolverine is very upset about this, so he starts a quest that's going to last throughout season 2. Where, you know, he wants to track down Morph and rehabilitate him.
Right. And which it seems like has started to happen, you know, because, like, ultimately in that fight...
They have a bond.
Yeah.
And Wolverine says something, Morph was the only guy who could ever make me laugh. You know, like, that's why he's worth saving.
That's really funny.
I mean, that's pretty valuable. If only one person in the world can make you laugh, you want to protect that person.
Seems, like, pretty sentimental for Wolverine.
Yeah, if Wolverine can't laugh from, like, late night TV or movies or, you know, like, or his other friends, you know, you gotta save Morph. Oh, and then, like, we skipped over it, but, like, Mr. Sinister, like, shows a bit of how he saved Morph's life. There's just another gross scene I wanted to mention where Morph is dead.
That also shows us that Mr. Sinister has some kind of, like, telekinetic power. Because, like, Morph doesn't remember it, but then Mr. Sinister uses that, like, diamond in the middle of his forehead.
Something's going on with that,
too. To, like,
too.
Project the memory into Morph's mind to make him remember.
But it's so strange because the way he you know, brings Morph back to life, but he says his brain was destroyed or something.
Uh-huh.
But to bring his brain back, he puts, like, this green scorpion that, like mushes into his head.
Yeah, it's really gross. It just gets, like, swallowed up
into his skin.
Into his forehead.
So there's something, like, gross going on in Morph's brain. But anyway, so that's how the episode ends, except there's sort of, like, a teaser ending. Professor X arrives in Antarctica and meets Magneto, and they're both confused as to, you know, like, I thought you called me! And it's a trap, and there's an explosion, and they're sort of knocked off the mountain, and it looks like they're doomed.
Right. And that's the end of that. And then, to be continued.
To be continued.
In episode 3.
Yeah, the next episode, Whatever It Takes, which is a very cool and relevant episode, especially for all those Legion fans out there.
Hmm.
So we'll get back on the ball with that next week. But before we go, I just want to mention some basic housekeeping stuff. Follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join our Facebook group, as we mentioned a few times. Communicate with us. Correct all our mistakes, which there are sometimes a few. It's the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Just search us out there. You should find it. It's pretty easy to join. And also, just make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Rate it 5 stars. Write us a nice review. Tell all your friends about it. You know, we're counting on all our fans to keep spreading the word. And yeah, that's all I got. Do you have any last words about this episode or anything else you'd like to say to the world? Sonia.
No pressure, no.
What is your message for world peace right now? Go.
It's that you can't be friends only of humanity. You have to expand your friendship search.
You're right. Yeah, that's a really good point. If there's one thing this show teaches us, is that extend your friendships beyond just humanity. Befriend anything or anyone you can. All right, so on that note, let's leave it right there. Thank you, Sonia.
Thanks, Willie. See you later.
Good night.
Bye.